Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey, folks, welcome to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're going to be visiting with Lou Meyer. Lou is a consultant with the California Healthcare Foundation and is the project manager for something called the California EMS Authority's Community Paramedicine Pilot Project. Paramedicine, community paramedicine, is something that's being tried around the country, and it's something that's coming to California. Lou is involved very closely with how that's all going to unfold. We're going to find out all about that in the next hour. So, Mike.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Joe will be with you in just a minute. Lou, I should say. First of all, we want to extend our condolences to the Cocker family. Joe Cocker lived in Painted Cave for many years. He was a supporter of the Wildland Residents Association. He had since moved, but a tremendous guy and a great
really
advocate.
Really good guy. Really good friend.
So
yeah, sorry to lose him.
Sorry to see him leave. A couple of research papers that are out that'll be interesting to folks around the community. How much defensible space is needed to reduce home losses in Chaparral? This is a paper from the California Fire Science Consortium, available at cafiresci.org. That's cafiresci.org. This is a good paper. It's something you should probably pass on to your insurance adjusters as they come around, because I don't think all of them are fully aware of some of the studies that have been done. This is a good document to have. Kind of along the same lines, the role of defensible space for residential structure protection during wildfires. This has a rather lengthy email address to pull it up at. Probably easier just to type it into Google. The role of defensible space for residential structure protection during wildfires. In fact, I'll put this up on the website and get it out there for people. There's a comprehensive study through a variety of different organizations, including the Conservation Biology Institute, U.S. Geological Survey, Western Ecology Research Center, the Department of Ecology and Biology, University of California, and several other authors in there as well. So this is a legitimate report, pretty much saying the same kind of thing. Santa Barbara County announcing your new website design. Take a look. It's countyofsb.org. That's countyofsb.org. And that gets us into our guest today. Oh, one other thing. We were asked 2 weeks ago about burn permits and if they were public record, and I checked with Santa Barbara County Fire, and in fact, they are public record. However, they come from a variety of different sources, so there's no database that somebody can go into and pull one up. You'd actually have to go get the book. It's a NCR-type form. You'd have to go get it, but they are public. The contacts that I talked to had never heard of anybody wanting to go get one outside of litigation issues. So, but anyway, they are public records. So with that.
So also, we should let people know that in Santa Barbara County, it is possible to exercise a burn permit. But if you live in the mountain communities and depend on the Forest Service to issue your permit, as I understand it, they are not issuing burning permits yet. They're waiting for CAL FIRE to give them permission to go forward with that.
There's a letter writing thing that goes about,
right. and it happens every year. Mm-hmm. And we on the mountain are about a month behind the county for burning, and we're quite impatient right now.
We are. But nonetheless, burning is occurring out in the San Ynez Valley and the Lompoc Valley and what have you.
Right.
With that, let's get into today's guest. I've been looking forward to this show since the bulletin came out from the EMSA, Emergency Medical Services Authority. Lou, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me to discuss this important project.
How did you come into the EMSA, and exactly who is the EMSA for our audience who's probably not familiar with who the authority is?
Well, I became involved with the Emergency Medical Services Authority some years ago when I was actually functioning as a member of the EMS Commission that oversees and advises the California Emergency Medical Services Authority. So the authority came into place back in 1980 to provide leadership in developing and implementing EMS systems throughout California. It's a state department. The director of the department, Dr. Howard Backer, is appointed by the governor, and Dr. Backer has extensive experience in emergency medicine as well as public health. So he's well geared and skilled to oversee this department. So what the authority does do is it deals with paramedic licensure and discipline. It deals with disaster medical preparedness and response, trauma systems, poison control, dispatch, and EMS communications. Also first aid and CPR for child care and injury prevention as well.
Well, very good. So you're the folks that the local level EMS agency, in this case Santa Barbara County, answers to, correct?
That's correct. There are a number of local EMS agencies. There's actually 33 local EMS agencies throughout the state. 26 of them are single county agencies, and then there are seven that have created multi-county or regional agencies. And that's where the day-to-day activity and collaboration with the EMS providers and the paramedics and EMTs take place.
Mm-hmm. We've had a variety of guests from public health, from the fire service, AMR, the medical community, talking about EMS over the last 8 years that we've been on the air. And we've kind of touched slightly into the world of community paramedicine, which is where things are going. What is community paramedicine, and your pilot program, how does that plug into it?
Well, community paramedicine is really a new and evolving model of community-based healthcare in which paramedics will function outside their customary emergency response and transport roles. All paramedics are really trained into what we might call resuscitative emergent care. However, in this case, in collaboration with other healthcare professionals, it would be ways that they facilitate more appropriate use of emergency resources and enhance access to primary care for medically underserved populations, as well as the urban and rural communities.
So I just want to go a little definition. Underserved medical populations. Could you elaborate that a little bit for our listening audience, what that means? Like, who are underserved?
Well, there are...
I mean, it's fairly obvious, but I think it might be helpful to explain that.
Right. There's parts of our population that do not have access or have not sought access to health care. And therefore, when they actually need some type of health care, they start looking to the emergency rooms to receive their care. So the emergency room ends up becoming like their private physician, and mm-hmm. that is a very costly approach to dealing with this type of...
For example, that would be the indigent, the migratory, the recently arrived illegal alien, all that sort of thing.
Yes, but it also can be some of the elderly population who live alone and mm-hmm. Don't have the ability to seek the social services or don't know how to seek the social services to deal with their health care.
So would they be referred by the agencies to you folks, or how would you make contact with this population?
Well, there's
oh, these population.
Yeah, there's a tough... What this pilot site does is it tests certain concepts, and there's actually five concepts that the pilot project looks to. The first one is really dealing with alternate destination. Right now, when a patient dials 911 and an ambulance arrives, under our current laws in California, we're required to transport that patient to an acute care emergency department. Under this particular test pilot that we're looking at is that the paramedic will have the ability to assess the patient and determine whether or not they need an acute care emergency department or something of a lesser resources, such as an urgent care center. And with the patient's consent, the paramedic can then take this patient to the urgent care center rather than directly to the emergency room.
So, Lou, we're going to have to take a break right now, and we'll pick this up when we come back, if that's good.
Visiting today with EMSA, Lou Mayer, Rob Sulzer on the board, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Community Alert on KZSB AM 1290 or Santa Barbara News Press Radio live at newspress.com. We'll be right back. Christmas Major, The Fire Horse Who Saved Christmas by Dave and Barbara Hubert. This heartwarming story tells about an abandoned orphan and a spirited draft horse coming together to save lives and care for others. Readers will learn about the exciting world of fire horses and travel back in time to the early 1900s when these mighty animals were so dedicated and loyal that they obediently pulled huge fire wagons straight towards their greatest fear, the perilous ravages of fire. Learn how a young colt destined for a life as a plow horse through a twist of fate becomes one of these incredible horses. Christmas Major is much more than a Christmas story. It is an adventure about character, loyalty, love, firefighting, and the magical bond between humans and animals. Christmas Major, The Fire Horse That Saved Christmas, available at many bookstores, Costco, and at HubiePictures.com. That's HubiePictures.com. Christmas Major, The Fire Horse That Saved Christmas, the perfect Christmas gift for this year by Dave and Barbara Hubert. Get your copy today.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're talking with Lou Meyer, who is involved with the program with Emergency Services, California EMS Emergency Services, Authorities Community Paramedicine Pilot Project. And we're just getting into what that means and what that entails. And there are 5 points that are involved in the way that they make contact with their whoever is going to take advantage. And we've covered one of the categories, and we might just go over it lightly.
Let's take it from category two, sir.
Okay, so the second concept that we're dealing with is alternate destination for behavioral health. And what this concept does is it allows a paramedic to transport patients with behavioral issues directly to mental health facilities when appropriate. Currently, the mental health patient is actually taken to the emergency room, evaluated for any medical condition, and then ends up being transported to the behavioral health or mental health facilities. In this particular concept, the paramedic, with his extra training that he'll be receiving, will have the ability to do that evaluation in the field and, when appropriate, take that patient directly to the mental health facility where they is the appropriate place for their care. So that also reduces the impact on the emergency rooms.
Of course.
The next area that we deal with is what we call the frequent 911 users. And there, again, are cases where the population who has not been connected with social services or through the private physicians and so forth end up using the emergency rooms as their private physicians or private doctor's offices. What this does is it addresses the needs of the frequent 911 callers by helping them access primary care and other social or psychological sociological services. But what this comes down to is that while the patient may call 911, they fall into frequent 911 when they're calling more than 10, 20 times over a short period of time. Then what we'll do here is we'll transport that patient to the emergency room, and then we'll refer them to a community paramedicine medic who will, in fact, follow up on them once they're released from the hospital and help them be directed to the right social services or healthcare services that they really need. Yeah. And there, again, reduces the low acuity patients in the hospitals.
Does this take into consideration one of the street terms is called treat and release, which paramedics currently are not allowed to do? Is this an area where some legislative changes could be made and maybe to kind of accelerate that process?
Well, we're not close to treat and release yet. But as we move through this pilot, that might be something that we can look at down the road. Okay. But what this pilot does is we still will transport this frequent 911 caller to an emergency room or in some cases under this pilot to an urgent care center. But what happens is that once they're released and we have some access to them, then the paramedic is going to go back out to them and see what their needs are so that maybe the need for calling 911 can be reduced significantly.
Okay.
So I'm not following any format here. These are just questions that just pop in. But I'm curious about how these individuals that are being treated, how does that treatment? We're going to be saving some money and et cetera, but they should actually be getting treated better than they are now because they will be getting more personal care and they will not be sitting and waiting for service in the emergency room so much. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, this whole project is toward what we call the triple aim, which is improving the experience of the care, improving the health of the population, and then reducing the cost of the healthcare.
Great. Yeah, that's great.
So we cover those three bases, and that's what these concepts do.
And so this project, it is in place now. I mean, are you presently involved in some of the areas in California, or are you just getting involved to begin the process? How is that all coming out?
Well, we went through an approval process with the Office of State Health Planning. Because what we have to use here is because our current law does not allow us to, or a paramedic to function in these expanded roles that we're talking about, there's a section of the law called the Health Workforce Pilot Project that will allow us to waive those regulations under very strict controls and allow to test these particular concepts. So we've gone through that approval process. That took almost a year, filing the applications. Well, once we got information of who wanted to participate, we vetted those who thought they wanted to participate to make sure they had the ability to do that. And then we filed the applications with the Office of State Health Planning. And then we received that approval in November. And we are now ready to move into the training phase. This is the very critical part of this overall pilot project, is because we now have to give these paramedics additional training, kind of move them from that resuscitative mindset to one of preventive health care. And that starts the 15th of January, and that's well over 100 hours of additional education, keeping in mind that a paramedic today receives approximately 1,400 hours of education to get his license, and then he or she is required to have continuing education every couple of years. So this is on top of that 1,400 hours, and then they go back into their community after taking what we call a core training program. They go back into their community, and they receive site-specific training that could be anywhere from another 100 to 200 hours of education. So we're looking at launching this program in May, June of 2015.
Sounds outstanding. I'm wondering, is this going to require hiring new paramedics, or do we have plenty of paramedics available for this training, or are we going to have to go through a whole hiring process for different ones, or how is that going to be affecting how many paramedics are out there doing different things?
Well, right now we're looking to the provider's current employees, those that are currently employed by either public or private agencies. And one of the requirements that we set is that they had to have a minimum of 4 years experience working in the field as a paramedic to be eligible to be
super.
Involved in this program.
Okay, super.
We're up to our next break here, visiting today with Cal ESMA, Lou Meyer, talking about community paramedicine on Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Rob Sulzer sitting in for the Richard Dugan on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Live at newspress.com on KZSB AM 1290. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Lou Meyer, who's involved with the California Emergency Medical Service Authority's Community Paramedicine Pilot Project, and he's explaining to us just what that is and how that may affect us all. And Mike.
Well, Lou, I wanted to get back to your 5 points, and point number five involves tuberculosis in Ventura County. Can you elaborate on that fifth one? Because that's an important issue in and of itself, TB.
Yeah, what this will actually do is it will allow the paramedic to directly observe the TB patient to ensure that they're taking their medications on a routine basis, and that's really required by public health regulations within each of the counties. And so this is basically in collaboration with the public health folks. At this moment, there's not enough of them to get out into the field to, number one, track down these particular patients to make sure that they, in fact, are taking their medications. So this is more social service, but also a very important public health component of monitoring the TB patient and making sure that they actually are receiving their medication as they need so that they can stay out in society rather than being quarantined in hospitals.
So this beta test, what's your ultimate objective and how long is the testing period?
The overall pilot?
Yes.
The overall pilot is, we're looking for a 2-year period.
Okay.
And then following the 2-year period, depending on all of the information and the data that we gather, we would then move to have a legislative change to change the law to allow this to happen all the time.
Now, when we look at legislative changes, there's probably some others that go beyond just what you're testing. How long is that process going to take? Because I would think that that's going to be another 2 years there, isn't it?
I would agree with you. Probably a year and a half to 2 years to carry this through.
Is that going to depend on the voters, or is that something that will be just put in place?
It'll depend on the legislator.
Yeah, the legislation will take that up. So
it's a legislative change.
So we're really looking at long-term is expanding the scope of practice for paramedics.
Expanding the role.
Right, okay. Now, that would be different, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we're talking about paramedics, there's an interesting statistics here you provided. 60,000 EMTs and 19,000 paramedics help make up the California EMS system. This includes 3 million calls for service annually, 3,600 ground ambulances and 50 air ambulances, 310 acute care hospitals with emergency departments, and 73 designated trauma centers. That's a lot of EMS, but then you look at the size of California. Is that enough?
Right.
Well, I think it is, and I think the system has evolved over the years. I'm from 1984, and I think that the care that folks receive today is a lot better than we were able to do in the early 80s, late 70s. But you're right, this is a very large state. But as we need individuals, those individuals are coming along.
Great.
What could be done by the public as a whole to help the EMSA? I mean, you guys are in the service providing part of it, but it seems to me that you need some feedback. This is a two-way street, and emergency medical services in reality impacts every single one of us because we never know when we're going to need an ambulance. We don't know when we're going to be a victim of a traffic collision or heart attack or whatever. We all have an investment in the success of this. What can the public do to help make this happen?
Well, this particular pilot project weighs heavily on the patient satisfaction side of this. Mm-hmm. So if, in fact, the patient becomes involved in this pilot and receives the services under this pilot, we're going to be looking very closely to their satisfaction level of what they thought of the care and whether or not they think that this care is something that should continue on. And when we get to the legislature, it's going to be very important that community awareness be there so that they can communicate with their legislators.
Who are the legislators that are prominent in the EMS world right now that people might recognize that they could contact? I don't know of any names off the top of my head myself.
I know of Hernandez, who was an EMT at one point, and he comes from somewhere in the Northern California area, but I'm not exactly sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, while I'm thinking about it, and I have it here in my hand, for those that are interested more about community paramedicine and the pilot project, a website to visit, you're going to have to write this down, is emsa.ca.gov, and then it's community_paramedicine. So that website again, emsa.ca.gov/community_paramedicine. And that's all one word. And I will put this link up on the Community Alert website. Also, there is a lot of information here on this website. And I would encourage everyone to take a few minutes to read what's happening in EMS and where it's going, because sooner or later, we're all going to find ourselves in the system, directly or indirectly. Anything you'd like to add to that, Lou, to kind of help people get more familiar with this?
No, it's just when you get into the website, do look for the Community Paramedicine page. And all of the information is there, and we continually try to keep that updated as additional information becomes available.
When do you think, realistically, the public as a whole is going to start seeing these changes? About 5 years, maybe?
As a whole, probably 4 to 5 years by the time we get through the legislative process.
We were talking during the break about some of the advantages that this program will have in the long run, and that's freeing up our emergency departments. What kind of problems are you seeing at the state level that is helping drive the need to change the way we do business?
Well, I think, as I mentioned at the break, the amount of time that paramedics are tied up within the emergency rooms, what we call wall time, is where there is not a bed available for them in the emergency room, that they actually have to stay with that patient on their particular ambulance gurney until such time as they can be transferred off, which takes away their ability to be out in the street to respond to the next call. It's also not, from a patient care perspective, the patient really needs to be not sitting along the wall, but at least being assessed. And we believe that under some of the components of the pilot project, the alternate destination side, those less acute patients can be taken to urgent care centers that have been appropriately vetted, therefore allowing and opening up the beds in the emergency rooms for the more acute care side.
Which could be anybody, not just people that are in the community paramedicine side of the program. I have here a list of the participating partners or agencies: Sierra Sacramento Valley, Solano County, Alameda County, Stanislaus County, Ventura County, Inland Counties, which I guess is a consortium, San Diego, Los Angeles, and Orange County. So you've got a good cross-section of California that are jumping on board with this.
Yes, we are. We have about 60% of the providers are public entities. Obviously, the other 40 are private entities. Each of them stepped forward with proposals to participate within this program. Like I say, they were vetted for their proposal and the appropriateness of their proposals. And I think we have a pretty good cross-section up and down the state of the different concepts to be tested. So it's not just like, you know, one small community here and there's not enough population to do what needs to be done. But, you know, it's well covered.
Well, we're up to our next break today, visiting with Emergency Medical Services Authority Lou Meyer, talking about community paramedicine pilot project that they're working on right now with Ted Adams, Mike Williams. On Community Alert, not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. And today we're talking with Lou Meyer, who is working as the manager for the California EMS Authority's Community Paramedicine Pilot Project. And we've been talking about paramedicine and how the pilot project is evolving. And Mike's got something for us.
Well, on a programming note, next Tuesday, we're going to have a repeat of our show from last year with Dave and Barbara Hebert, Christmas Major, about writing their book and the research that they did and a little bit about the history of the fire service going all the way back to European heritage.
Stuff, yeah.
It's an interesting show. We did it down in Orange County. Again, that'll be next Tuesday. That'll be a rebroadcast. And also from the California EMS Authority, happy holidays to the thousands of EMS personnel, administrators, and stakeholders throughout California who provide care and comfort when people need it most. The EMS Authority extends the warmest wishes to you and to yours for a joyful, safe, and healthy holiday season. And I know we have a lot of EMS people that pay attention and listen to our show,
they
and
do.
We wanted to extend that holiday greeting to you. Lou, welcome back. I wanted to get back to one area that this program addresses, and it's actually part of the Health Care Act, and that's post-discharge support. Solano, Alameda, Butte, San Bernardino, Orange, and Los Angeles are all participating in the testing with you. Why don't we talk a little bit about what is post-discharge support, what does the health care law require of the hospitals, and where does you fit in?
Well, where we fit in as the EMS authority under this concept is as patients who are discharged, and the concepts that we're looking at for post-discharge are the diagnosis of folks who are being discharged that have a history of congestive heart failure, COPD, and sometimes had suffered an acute a heart attack and are now being released to go home. And what we're doing here is we're filling the gap from the time that the patient is discharged and sent home until such time as home health care can be arranged for them, where home health care nurses will come and visit the patient in their homes. What we're doing here is for the first 3 to 4 days while that gap is open, is we're filling that gap by having a paramedic actually go and visit the patient at their home, and these patients will be referred to the paramedics by the hospitals. Go and visit them, make sure that they understand their discharge instructions, make sure that they had filled the medications that they should have filled, and also do a little home assessment to make sure that the surroundings within their particular home are safe from fall hazards and so on and so forth. So right now the hospitals actually are penalized from the Medicare system if, in fact, a patient is readmitted for that same diagnosis of congestive heart failure or COPD or the acute MI, by not receiving any additional funds if the patient is readmitted. So the hospitals want to make sure that these patients are taken care of and that somebody is keeping an eye on them so that if, in fact, they have a problem and start to deteriorate a little bit, that there's someone there that can get to them quickly to make sure that it doesn't go so far as to require another hospitalization.
So this is going to require a lot of interaction with the emergency departments, correct?
Well, not actually the emergency departments, but more of the private physicians, as well as the home health care providers and the hospital social services departments.
Okay, so if I'm in the hospital and I'm discharged and they tell me to go home and stay off my leg or whatever for a month, you guys are going to get notified, not you guys specifically, but someone's going to be notified that I've been discharged and to contact me and make sure that I've got my meds and I'm following doctor's orders and those kinds of things, correct?
Right. That's following a hospital discharge and not your typical
right.
emergency room discharge.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch as it unfolds, because if I don't follow directions and something occurs to me after within the 30-day envelope of time and I appear back in the hospital, now it becomes a he said, she said, doesn't it?
I don't know. I don't know if we'll go that far or not. It's, again, this is just to fill the gap to home health care gets in there. There are patients who are going to end up back in a hospital. There is no question
sure.
about that.
Sure.
So it's not a he said, she said. I think it just comes down to making sure they have the appropriate knowledge, that somebody has eyes on them during that gap of time, is be able to alert the physician in case medication changes need to take place, rather than having to go to the hospital to determine that's the case.
Right. So is that a daily check-in or multiple times a week, or it just depends on the patient, most likely, right?
I think it depends on the patients, but initially I think we're going to be doing pretty close to a daily check-in until the home health care.
Which usually doesn't take long for home health care to kick in.
Well, it takes sometimes 3 to 5 days.
Yeah, because I had a problem with that. Well,
the long-term benefits for everyone need to be articulated. Freeing up the emergency rooms and allowing physicians and emergency staff to be able to work on the people that actually belong in the emergency rooms is critical. It opens things up. It opens up the ambulances, gets paramedics back out on the street, frees up dispatch. There's just so many positives to the thing. And then also having somebody go and check on people once they've been discharged from the hospital, which frequently become frequent flyers, is the buzzword of having to go pick these people and take them back to the hospital. So much of that can be prevented and or diverted to another facility. In the long run, this is going to be good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. It is.
How to market that so that everyone understands it, that might be a little bit of a challenge, and that's why I wanted to do this show today, was to get people to start thinking about some of the changes that are happening. Within our population within California, what are we looking at as people falling into the medical world, say 55, 60 and above? That population is growing, correct? The baby boomers?
Tremendously.
So the need for this is going to only grow, I should think, substantially.
I think as healthcare evolves, that this is going to continue to be needed.
When you look back on your career in healthcare, do you think when we started out, I mean, I started in 1977. I don't know when you started. You mentioned 1984. But we all have quite a bit of time under our belt. Did you ever think we would get to where we are today in this kind of evolution of the EMS system?
No, I actually started in 1972, and one of the first EMTs in California. So there's no way that I thought we would end up where we are today. I've been an advocate of getting here with my time on the EMS Commission and in leadership roles in EMS I spent 15 years as a paramedic, but I spent another 25 years in leadership helping with, programs and moving things forward. So I think that this is an excellent project, one that's going to be done under very tight controls because it is, in fact, a pilot. And that way, when it's time to go to the legislature, hopefully there's enough community awareness and acceptance of the programs that show that we're, in fact, improving, the triple aim, improving the experience of the care, improving the health of the population, and reducing the cost of health care. And I think this pilot is built in a way to be able to show that.
Well, I would also think that survival rates would also increase, considering that more and more people are going to be involved in after-hospital care, or at least checking on folks. That's going to be a critical factor also. You know, we had a guest on the show about 6 months ago. He's a flight nurse with one of the helicopter companies, and he used to be a paramedic with the city of San Francisco. And I asked him, why did he leave San Francisco? And he said because he realized that as a paramedic, he was too limited on what he could actually do in the area of patient care. And so he went and put himself through nursing school and subsequently went and worked for one of the helicopter EMS companies. And it's a profound difference for him anyway as to what you can do being a paramedic versus what you can do as an RN. And when we come back, let's expand on that just a little bit in the close of the show. On Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, we'll be back in just a minute on KZSB AM 1290. Thank you. Christmas Major, the Fire Horse Who Saved Christmas by Dave and Barbara Hubert. His heartwarming story tells about an abandoned orphan and a spirited draft horse coming together to save lives and care for others. Readers will learn about the exciting world of fire horses and travel back in time to the early 1900s when these mighty animals were so dedicated and loyal that they obediently pulled huge fire wagons straight towards their greatest fear, the perilous ravages of fire. Learn how a young colt destined for a life as a plow horse through a twist of fate becomes one of these incredible horses. Christmas Major is much more than a Christmas story. It is an adventure about character, loyalty, love, firefighting, and the magical bond between humans and animals. Christmas Major, the Fire Horse That Saved Christmas, available at many bookstores, Costco, and at HubiePictures.com. That's HubiePictures.com. Christmas Major, the Fire Horse That Saved Christmas, the perfect Christmas gift for this year by Dave and Barbara Hubert. Get your copy today.
Hey, folks, welcome to the last segment of the show for this week. My name is Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we've been talking with Lou Meyer, who's been explaining to us what the EMS Authority's Community Paramedicine Pilot Project is and how that's going to work and how long it's going to take to implement. Mike.
Well, let me get the website out again. HTTP, blah, 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 emsa.ca.gov. That's emsa.ca.gov/community_paramedicine. That's all one word, community_paramedicine. Lou, any closing thoughts before we go?
Well, I think that the emphasis really needs to be here is while we're looking at a paramedic and expanding the role of the paramedic, we're not really changing his scope of practice. And we are not looking to take away from the roles of the other healthcare professionals, the nurses, the home health aides, and so on and so forth. But this is really to fill the gaps as we move along here and utilize the resources that are out in the street 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and have been appropriately trained.
I think it's important to point out that this program is not operating in Santa Barbara County specifically yet. So nobody listening to us locally will be involved in this, but some of the other counties that listen in are, including Ventura. So, well, thank you very much, sir, for taking time out to be with us. I appreciate your efforts. If anybody has any questions, give us a call at Community Alert, and we will forward them up to you, and we can get the answers for you. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Take care. And from the Wildland Residents Association, we'd like to extend everyone our heartfelt holiday cheer and thank everyone for the support that you've given us over the year. This has been a very good year for the WRA. We've had quite a few projects that have been successful. Funding has been good. And I just think I'd take a minute here to thank folks for making that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, we got high hopes for the new year up on the hill and in the rest of our fire-prone communities because we've gotten some rain, and it looks like we're going to be able to.
It's ironic. We went from no water at all to too much water all at once. And it's just
too bad we can't gather that water as it flows towards the ocean. I know there's some places that we do, but there are a lot of places where it just goes.
Well, it's been interesting to watch. On a safety note, there are no shortage of unstable oak trees and pine trees up in the past.
On hillsides and as well, I notice, on these road cuts.
I would encourage people, as the winds continue and we see another storm front coming through later in the next week, to pay attention to the trees, go look at them, and make sure they're not rotting out at the baseline or that your root structures have been compromised, because that's become a real problem. Mm-hmm. And you don't need that tree falling on your house, falling on your car, or
as
worse.
As you well know.
Yes, I've had that problem myself. It's not something you want to go through.
Okay.
But again, we wish to extend our greatest greetings to everyone out there, and thank you for your support on Community Alert.
Well, thanks so much to Lou Meyer for coming on board.
Yeah, Lou was great. That website again, emsa.ca.gov/community_paramedicine. Also be available at wildlandresidents.org under Community Alert. That was Lou Meyer with the California Emergency Medical Services Agency. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, thank you, Rob, for taking time out to sit in for the diligent Richard Dugan on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB AM 1290.
Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, with funding provided by a grant from the Cooperative Fire Program of the U.S. Forest Service, Department of Agriculture, Pacific Southwest Region, through the California Fire Safe Council, with additional funding provided by the Fire Services Training Institute. The views and conclusions contained in this program are those of the hosts and guests and should not be interpreted as representing the opinions or policies of the California Fire Safe Council, U.S. Forest Service, the U.S. government, or this station. Any mention of trade names or commercial products does not constitute their endorsement by the California Fire Safe Council or the U.S. government. Commercial use or rebroadcast is prohibited. For further information, call 805-964-7194 or visit wildlandresidents.org. Technical assistance provided by Richard Dugan, Jim Williams, and Mark A. Ward. The WRA and this station are equal opportunity providers.